Hello, I'm Jack West, medical oncologist and the medical director of the thoracic oncology program at the Swedish Cancer Institute in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to Medscape Oncology Insights, coming to you from the 2017 Congress of the European Society for Medical Oncology, or ESMO. Today, we'll be discussing some of the exciting new data being presented here at ESMO in lung cancer. Joining me in this discussion is Dr. Hossein Borghaei, Chief of Thoracic Medical Oncology at Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia, and Sanjay Papat, a consultant thoracic medical oncologist at the Royal Marsden Hospital in London. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would say that there were many important presentations in lung cancer. In fact, this was a banner year at ESMO or globally mm-hmm. in lung cancer. But among the most important, I would say, is the PACIFIC trial that finally seems to break the impasse that we've had for more than a decade in locally advanced non-small cell stage 3 unresectable disease, where we have tried all of that time to improve on our rather dismal results. Yes, we can cure a minority, maybe 15 or 20% of patients with chemo and radiation.
Right.
But, you know, the standard has been a couple of cycles of platinum-based chemo with concurrent radiation. And we've tried increasing the chemo. That didn't really work. We've tried escalating the radiation. That was harmful. And we've also tried adding targeted therapies. Mm-hmm. And in general, that's been a mistake and even some harm there.
Sure.
So immunotherapy, the PACIFIC trial was a large study, over 700 patients receiving at least two cycles of chemo with radiation concurrently. And then following that with either a year of durvalumab administered every 2 weeks or placebo. And it's highly significant, at least by progression-free survival. And the overall survival is in the right direction, a strong trend, mm-hmm. not statistically significant. What are your takes on, is this enough to change practice? Yeah. I'll start with you, Haas.
I think it's a really good question. I think, you know, ultimately what matters to the patients, obviously, is the overall survival. They want to know how long are they going to live longer if they get additional treatment beyond the usual chemo radiation. And we all know chemo radiation is a tough regimen. Yeah. So you really have to have clear survival advantage and good data to tell a patient, after everything you've gone through, we're going to give you another year of a maintenance of another drug, or in this case, I guess, consolidation of another drug, which has failed. But so let's break this apart. Is the PFS that was reported with a single drug that seems to be well-tolerated significant? I think it is significant. Is it going to be practice-changing? I think for most physicians, this is going to be practice-changing. I think I will be inclined to offer this to my patients who still have a good enough performance status. But I think what does matter, what is going to absolutely nail this as the standard of care across the board, is going to be the overall survival data.
Right. And I should clarify, it wasn't that it's not significant.
It's just
not presented.
Right.
It was an early interim analysis.
Right.
And overall survival was not part of that analysis.
Exactly.
But the progression-free survival, it wasn't just a median difference. And in fact, the medians were remarkably different.
Right,
I mean, it was 5.6 months
versus
16.8.
Right.
So that's remarkable. And it was sustained when you got to 12 months and 18 months. That still holds up. But, you know, I think it's important. We all want to see a survival difference. And we don't know whether we're delaying a relapse or actually going to increase that cure rate. Sanjay, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you. This is a hugely important trial. It's a trial that's been anticipated for a long time. And I think the results are really quite clinically meaningful. This is the first big breakthrough we've had in radically treatable stage 3 disease for years. This is big news. So progression-free survival is reported. It's a co-primary endpoint. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing here. So overall survival, yes, still to be reported. And I really look forward to that mature data. But not only was progression-free survival statistically significant, but clinically meaningful as well, with a wide separation of the curves.
Right.
So, yes, there are caveats in how we report progression-free survival in terms of how does the radiology appear to mark it as a progression event. But actually, that would have probably washed out in the randomization process. So, to me, the magnitude of the benefit that we're seeing in PFS is meaningful. And I would be very surprised if that magnitude of difference that we see does not translate to a significant and a clinically meaningful survival advantage. So do I think this is worthy of changing practice? Yeah, I think this potentially is. And I think this is a big sea change in how we should be thinking about our stage three patients.
Yeah, I would say that, mm-hmm. yes, on the one hand, we have not tended to rely on imaging that much post-chemo radiation because, honestly, it's kind of a murky mess mm-hmm. afterwards.
Yeah.
And
agree,
so
yeah.
interpreting what is viable yeah. and what is post-radiation yeah. change is fraught with peril.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this did have a blinded review committee yeah. and it... there was a randomization, and the differences are not subtle. Mm-hmm. It is an enormous difference yeah. in these curves, and it's sustained over time. And I agree yeah. with you. It's extremely likely and hard to envision that yeah. that separation sustained out at 12 and 18 yeah. months and ongoing
yeah.
won't be accompanied by at least some prolonged yeah. period of interval overall survival difference.
Yeah.
So looking at, practically speaking, mm-hmm. I suspect that's going to be enough for durvalumab to be approved. It's going to change my practice. I will definitely use it. What are your thoughts there?
I think it definitely does change my practice. I mean, I'm going to bring out a couple of points and see yeah. what you guys think yeah. about it. So yeah. what we don't know is what kind of chemotherapy was given to this patient. At least that was not presented. Going back to the paper, we have to see if we can tease that out because there are some practice differences
yeah.
here and there.
Yeah. Sure.
I can tell you that where I practice, when I get the second opinions, a lot of the community physicians around me like the weekly carbotaxol, which by nature requires two cycles of
yeah.
consolidated full dose
yeah.
after that. So how do we graft, how do we make this durva yeah. In a consolidation
this was
work with that?
Two cycles minimum, but really yeah. nothing specified beyond
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So but you imagine it's sort of like a SWOG regimen with cisotoposide, with something to that effect. So we need to figure out what... how are you going to incorporate that into your practice if you're using weekly carbotaxol, and how do you do the other chemo?
True.
So I think that's one part that I think we'd like to see. But again, if I have access to the drug and I have no issues with the reimbursements or anything like that, if I see a patient with good performance status who's done really well, stable disease after chemo RT, my preference would be to offer the durvalumab now as consolidative therapy because, again, I cannot argue with it. A median PFS of 16 months and yeah. 11 months difference between the control arm.
Sanjay, what do you think is likely in the UK? It's obviously
so,
a different climate.
Yeah, so in the UK things are slightly different, and there's a health technology assessment process that needs to occur before the drugs are approved to be reimbursed by the state for general reimbursement. But there are mechanisms in place for access prior to licensing, and they're very much driven by the sponsor. So I very much hope that AstraZeneca consider applying to one of these schemes that potentially exist to allow access to the UK population. But overall, we will need to see some cost-benefit analysis of projected overall survival to ensure that the regulatory reimbursement authorities, at least in the UK, figure that this is a benefit. But in terms of clinical benefit so far, I don't think we can argue too much about
right.
it.
Let's turn... we have an approval in the US for...
Mm-hmm.
what we might refer to as the KEYNOTE-21G approach, carbo, pemetrexed with pembrolizumab in an unselected population. And there's some controversy about whether that should be broadly adopted because it's a phase 2 trial,
mm-hmm.
123 patients, and though a dramatic PFS benefit, with the potential for crossover not as clear that there's a translation to overall survival. You actually presented an update, so can you tell us a bit about the salient points there and if you think that changes things?
Okay, so is it going to change things or not? That's a much deeper question. So what I presented was the fact that now with 18 and a half months median follow-up, response and PFS still in favor of the triple combination, pembrolizumab, pemetrexed and carboplatin. So that's good to see. You want to see, long-term follow-up showing that your PFS and response are still good.
Yeah.
But now what we have is some survival advantage with the addition of pembrolizumab. Now, I have to caution everybody, obviously, this was sort of almost like a post-hoc analysis. It wasn't
yeah.
part of the primary analysis. So I don't think I feel comfortable sitting here. So it's definitely statistically significant because the power was
yeah.
spent. But it is clearly showing that the group that got pembrolizumab
yeah.
now has a better survival. The crossover is always going to confound things, and how do you interpret that?
Yeah.
Does that simply mean because they got an active drug after failing chemotherapy that everybody lived longer?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can make those
yeah.
kinds of arguments. The numbers, as you suggested, is too small for us to have that. we don't have survival by level of PD-L1 expression. Yeah. There's a lot of argument that maybe the group that had the highest expression sort of drove the benefit. I don't know, and I don't think that's been proven. We also know that the phase 3 study hopefully is going to be presented relatively soon,
right.
Although at least the PFS part, because when I'm looking at a median of 18.7 months to get survival advantage, I'm thinking even for the phase 3, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So with all of those caveats in mind, should this be the standard of care? And I think based on principles, phase 3 should be the determining factor as whether this should be the standard of care or not. Am I using it in my practice? Again, somebody has PD-L1 over 50%, I'm still sticking with single-agent pembrolizumab. People who are negative or low expressors, if I have somebody who has a huge amount of disease burden, I think I'm comfortable with using the combination, again, because we have the approval. Because what I'm looking at is a 55% response rate with a combination or something right. in that neighborhood. And it's kind of hard not to offer that to a patient who you think absolutely needs it.
Well, I think I've been somebody who has been not as inclined to embrace mm-hmm. it broadly, although I agree in the subset with a large tumor burden or who we clearly sense is progressing quickly enough that we wouldn't be confident they will get mm-hmm. to a second line. I think that always made sense. But I have been concerned about, if you can cross over and get the same benefit, why mm-hmm. rush the process?
Yeah.
On the other hand, when you see these widening curves for survival, mm-hmm. it reassures me that it's almost certainly not a bad choice.
Right.
And so, yes, I absolutely want to see the phase 3 results. It's critical. But I really doubt that it's going to be wildly discrepant, and it is reassuring. And as you say, that said, the statistics of it, taking multiple looks and just mm-hmm. stopping when you're happy that it crosses the p-value is not quite valid. But I don't think that there's anything absolutely magical. The numbers of the patients don't change,
right,
certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, to me, more reassuring to see that it only looks stronger over time. Sanjay, your thoughts?
So, the key issue here with this trial is what's chemo bringing to the equation in the over 50% TPS? Because this is a group that we traditionally treat with frontline pembro monotherapy. How much bang for the buck more am I getting by adding in my platinum doublet chemotherapy? Is it worth it? And these are the types of details that we, need to see from the longitudinal time to event analysis, be it PFS stratified by PD-L1 status. And that will really help us work out more in our minds about what the combination's bringing that monotherapy isn't bringing and who we should be thinking about this sort of combination for. But certainly the separation that we're now seeing in the overall survival curves are really quite impressive.
Right.
And I don't think we can argue with that. And what we've seen so far, I think, the theme of the program is, are we getting magnitude more benefit by bringing immunotherapy forward into the stage of the disease? And potentially by combining that with other standard of care agents as well, we might be seeing that. So, I'm very optimistic about what the future might hold for combination therapy. But, at the end of the day, the proof's in the pudding. Let's see the data.
Mm-hmm. Right. So last one that I want to cover of so much to cover, but here... CheckMate 153 is a study that was presented by Dr. David Spiegel and started out with over 1,000 patients, and it gets winnowed down. This is a study looking at the question of whether there's a value in continuing treatment or stopping after a fixed duration, in this case, a year. So we start out with a large number. This is a second-line trial with nivolumab. Of the patients who got it and hadn't progressed at a year, randomization to continue indefinitely or stop with the potential to resume it. I was rather surprised to see such a difference favoring continuation. I think many of us have been unsure, ambivalent, and thought it wouldn't be as much of a difference as we saw here, even with a trend in terms of survival. Does this answer the question for you? Because we're talking about still, not that much more than 100 patients after all is said
right.
and done in the randomized portion.
Right.
So what's your take home from this?
It's hypothesis generating. It's interesting. I'm not sure I'm sold on the idea that I need to continue this. I'm still sort of thinking that maybe a shorter duration would be adequate. Now, again, this study, as was sort of discussed after the presentation, was designed as a toxicity, so it didn't have really the power to look at some of the stuff that we want to look at it. I definitely think it's an interesting study because it sort of points to the fact that maybe looking at the duration issue in a more systematic manner would be important. It has health economic benefits. It has patient quality of life. I mean, if you don't have to bring the patient in every 2 weeks to give them drug for 2 years, I think it makes a huge difference in the quality of life. I'm with you. I'm surprised that it does show PFS and a trend towards overall survival. I did not expect anything like that. Too small of a study, not statistically designed to look at that answer clearly, but something that tells me we definitely need to look at it.
And Sanjay, obviously the economics loom large here too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
When you put it all together, does this lead you to feel like it is the right thing to do to continue indefinitely, or are you still open to that?
You know, I think we don't really know statistically what the answer to that question is. However, what we have here is an exploratory analysis because it's not powered to answer the question. But the difference was really big. You know, this is a big difference. This isn't just a laser pointer between the curves.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big difference in outcomes that we saw here. And yes, the OS wasn't statistically significant. So what we've got here is a meaningful difference. It's underpowered, but it is definitely a difference that we're seeing here in terms of the PFS, which is a lot bigger than I would have anticipated. In fact, there's a bit of a disconnect because many of us, I think, were thinking, well, if you stop early because of toxicities, you still have that ongoing benefit. So this data set is a bit discordant and discrepant. Having said that, with this data in the public domain, I think it's quite difficult to say, well, you know, maybe after a year we should stop when we've got clear evidence of some ongoing PFS benefit in that situation. And I wonder really whether one of the questions we should be asking is about intensity of dosing. Do we really need to, you know, carry on that
Absolutely.
Schedule? Do we need to front load access per schedule and then be a bit
I think
less dose intense?
That's a third option
yep.
there too. I must say that in a world, this is a world where there is no clear standard. We're not extending beyond a year as the standard. This is just don't know what exactly to do, and these trials generally did do a continuous therapy. So in this situation, I'm certainly swayed that the differences were a pretty big magnitude. I'm no longer on the bubble about this right now, at least in the absence of more data.
Fair enough, yeah.
But thank you both for joining me. A great discussion on some very relevant issues, and thanks for joining us today.